You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is author and historian Deanna Spingola. Deanna, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for asking me to be on.
Deanna, I've seen your stuff over the years, and sadly I've never gotten to read any of your books, although that is on my agenda, and hopefully we'll be speaking in the future about that. But we are going to be speaking today about the upcoming AFP Free Speech Conference in Austin, Texas, on Veterans Day weekend, November 8th to the 10th. Before we get into the conference and your part in it, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Alrighty, I am, from a writing standpoint, I started writing articles in 2005 for several websites, and then I decided that I thought, well, I might write a book. In fact, two publishers contacted me in December of 2008 and asked me if I would like to write a book for them. And I opted to go with the first one because I thought it was just fair. So I spent a couple of years writing this book and writing and writing, and I was so honored to have two publishers ask me. It was quite an experience to research and write this book. Of course, I had done a lot of research about the things that I was writing about anyway. After spending a couple of years on this book, and it was just about to go to publication, the publisher notified me and he said, we can't do this. You have to make some changes. And I said, and what would those changes be? And he said, well, you really shouldn't be using the J word. You shouldn't refer to people as Jews. You have to go ahead and just let people try to figure it out for themselves and not point it out. So he said, and I want to wait for another year, bring it out in the fall, and I'd like to have somebody work with you. In other words, a handler. And I said, I don't think so. And since the publisher had not really followed through with some of the other promises that he had made to me in the process of writing and whatnot, I just decided to publish my own book. And so we parted ways. And kind of funny, a couple of days later, I notified the second publisher that I was no longer affiliated with the first guy and asked him if he was still interested in going ahead. And I didn't even hear back from him. So I figured that these guys were probably trying to tie me up for a while and then just not publish my work.
Wow. I mean, that says so much. What was the work?
I was working on the first book, and it got so big, it actually got to be about 1,200 pages. And so the initial publisher and I decided, okay, we'll break it up and make it three books. My first book has almost 700 pages in it, and that grew from 400 to 700 when I was doing it on my own. And so my first book is the first part of my growing book. So I made it a trilogy.
Okay, and what's the name of it?
It's called The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation.
What made you want to research something like that?
Well, I believe that history is so essential to know so that we can understand what is going on today and so that we can see also that what the so-called ruling elite, the tactics that they have used in the past, are the exact same ones that they're using now. They never change their agenda. They never change their tactics or their mode of operation. And it's unfortunate that people do not know accurate history, because if they did, they would recognize what is going on and be able to stop it. And of course, we always know that the victors, when we're talking about warfare, and warfare has become such a part of our culture, particularly since the so-called Civil War, that history is written by the victors. And so I wanted to go back and really shed some light on the actual facts, particularly regarding warfare. Who is behind it? Why it starts? Who makes all the money? And of course, all the deaths, which satisfies the agenda for the depopulation program that was actually formally put in place in 1974.
Wow, I can't wait to read it. The Jews obviously play a prominent part in all this, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's probably why the two publishers decided they didn't want anything to do with me.
Right. How big of a part do they play in the misery of the world?
Oh, gosh, if I were to put numbers to it, I'd say 85%.
Wow, looking forward to reading that book. Now, what's it down to? You said 700 pages?
Right. The first book, it was supposed to be 400, but it grew to 700 pages. My second book is similar. It is called The Zionist Seizure of World Power. It is also pretty big, 700 pages.
And those publishers didn't get a chance to see the second book, right? They would have loved that one.
The first publisher saw the entire work, the 1,200 pages, and he right away, he said, oh, we can't talk about the Jews. We just cannot talk about the Jews. So how can you not talk about the Jews?
Maybe they're not really here. Maybe they don't exist. Is that what they mentioned?
I have no idea. How can you not talk about the fall? I mean, it's so imperative to not only know history, but to know who the criminals are and know who has caused all this egregious warfare and all the deaths and all the misery and all the famines and everything else.
Are you Jewish? Well, I mean, you could be, right?
No.
Okay. Are you anti-Semitic?
No, I'm anti-Talmudic.
Okay. And have you had any experience with Jews, or did this just come out of your research? When you started to do the research, you began to realize that they happen to occupy in the 85% spot of the World Misery Index. And those are my words, by the way.
Right. I have had a lot of experience because of my occupation. I was a representative for several textile companies, and mostly out of New York, fabric companies. And those are all monopolized by Jewish interests. All the companies that I worked for, except for one, were Jewish. And I know how they work in business, and I interacted with several of them. Before that, I really hadn't known a lot about them other than what I had read. And of course, when I was a kid, I believed that the Holocaust happened. I read all the books and cried the tears and had empathy for them. And then as I began to research, and I wasn't even aware of this in 2005, but as I began to research, and anybody who does any kind of research, in-depth research at all, is going to run into the cabal. It's just unavoidable, because if you're really doing any kind of research, they're there. They're just there in the background. And when you look at the machinations that they go through, how they get war started, how they use money, how they manipulate people, how they manipulate governments, how they manipulate businesses, corporations, and populations, and the media, how could we not recognize that they are behind it? And you can only do that with research. And if you're researching and you don't run into the cabal, then I have to question what books you're reading, because, well, you have to read both sides of every issue also. You cannot just take one side of any viewpoint. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous, unwise. You have to know both sides.
That makes sense. But of course, the whole point here being that the powers that be, they definitely do not want this type of information being introduced to the general populace. I shouldn't even say the general populace, because the general populace doesn't read. They text. But
right.
The learned class, and
right.
They can't afford to have this information obviously introduced, especially in the fashion that you have introduced it in, because here you're doing it in an even-handed way. And like you said, I mean, any serious researcher will come across this cabal, and they will have to recognize it and identify it for the benefit of the readers, because if you didn't do that, you wouldn't be doing your job as an author and a historian. So that's amazing stuff here. I was going to crack a joke about, you know what the smallest book in the world is. Have you heard of that one, Deanna?
No.
The Book of Jewish Business Ethics.
Oh.
That's anti-Semitic.
No, I can verify that, honestly. Yes. In my business, I was a commission-only rep. In other words, the companies didn't pay me. They paid me on what I sold. And one of the companies that I worked for, they had decided apparently to level it off to a certain figure that I was going to make per month. It didn't matter. I could have sold $1 million worth of textiles, and I would only get this small, it was $500 a month. But I worked for seven companies, or six or seven. It was flexible. So I represented them for 3 months and got $500 each month. I said, this isn't working out. And somebody had told me before, they're cheaters. Don't trust them. Don't believe them. But I always give people the benefit of the doubt. So I did.
Yeah. There's a reason why that joke exists.
Oh, absolutely. They were always cheating me. In fact, I had some customers that said, hey, we will let you know when we buy from such and such so that you can make sure that you get your commission.
Yeah, they seem to do that in a variety of industries. I know I've studied Hollywood quite extensively, and they design the compensation for the people who put these movies together in such a way that they never make any money. They base it on, well, you'll make X percentage off of the profit of the movie, and they make sure there never is a profit. That's one of their standard schemes. Have you come across that in your research of the tribe?
Certainly. And that's also true in the music industry. I mean, they've cheated so many musical stars out of, you know, a lot of money.
But then when those stars voice their opinion about what has happened to them, and there have been many over the decades, then the ADL smear machine goes into action and they want an apology. This is what's amazing. You can even track this. The ADL comes out and says, they need to apologize. Then the buffoon star comes out and apologizes. And then the ADL comes out again and says, that wasn't a good enough apology. We need more. And then they come out and they genuflect and they beg and they grovel. And then that's okay. Have you noticed that standard pattern?
Oh, absolutely. When you were talking, I was thinking Mel Gibson. I mean, my goodness, they really just all but ruined his career.
That's what they do, because you can't talk about the Jews. Well, guess what? We're going to talk about the Jews, and we're going to especially talk about the Jews down in Austin, Texas, because we can. this really is, I was discussing this with Tex Mars the other day, that if you ever see a free speech conference anywhere else other than sponsored by American Free Press, which is clearly America's last real newspaper because they tell the truth, if you ever see another free speech conference, it can't be a free speech conference because they're not allowed to talk about the Jews.
Exactly.
So we are going to talk about the Jews on Veterans Day weekend. And Deanna, can you give the listeners a little idea about what you might be talking about there?
I will probably be talking from my second book, The Zionist Seizure of World Power, and talk about just who these people are, why they got a handle on everything, and why they were able to do what they did. They use blackmail. They use all kinds of tactics. They attempt to put a handler with every political personality. They run everything. So I'm going to talk about those kinds of things, how they got World War I started, what they were doing to get World War II started. And my third book, which I'm working on right now, just trying to finish up, is going to be talking about World War II and the changes that were created following World War II bring us to what we have now, which is a communist country. But it really started with the so-called Civil War. So when you talk about anything that's going on, you have to talk about the war, because it's always through warfare, through revolution, that the Jews take power. They are the most revolutionary people in the entire world. When I was a kid and reading about the poor, submissive Jews going to their deaths, I'm thinking, even as a kid, I questioned that. And I thought, why are these people so stupid? Don't they have any self-esteem? Don't they have any fight in them? They're just going to march to their deaths in these concentration camps? This just didn't make any sense to me. Even as a child, you have to say, well, gosh, why would they allow themselves to do that? And then you figure out, well, they actually didn't, because it was a big farce and a big hoax on the world's public.
Which they then turned into actual laws against even doubting the official version, which is incredible.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that about that, because I've also thought that, why would they just go, okay, well, I guess I got to march into the oven or sit here on the ditch while they put a bullet in my head. I mean,
right.
I would fight. I mean, most people would fight, but the Jews, oh, well, woe is me. Oy vey, go ahead and kill me. Turn my skin into a lampshade, which is nonsense, too. It's incredible. You know, we were on the radio last night on the AFP Editors Roundtable and discussing things along these lines as it applied to Greece, how the Jews are manipulating that country now. And I said to Mike Piper and Pete Bob Heracles, they're very proactive. The tribe is proactive. It's a nice way of saying that they meddle and manipulate basically everything of significance that goes on in our world today. And your books prove it. And I really can't wait to get into them. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in Austin on November 8th through the 10th and clinking some glasses and maybe ripping apart some ribs like they do in Texas. I don't know what it is they're going to have there, but Texas reminds me of ribs.
Me too. Yeah. I've been to Texas several times in my former life. I did some programs down there when I was teaching quilting and whatnot. Texas is a very unique place. It's a wonderful place.
Yeah, it is. I enjoyed it. I had a good time there in the 80s when I was there. Deanna Spingola, author and historian, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to the next time we can speak, and looking forward to seeing you in Austin, Texas in November.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. Have a great day.